The following program is produced by the Tech Talk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Diedrich Bader from Batman, and you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Sean DeWeird.
And in case you don't know, we are the show that talks about computers,
technology,
and of course the internet and all that fun stuff that goes with it. Fresh for a brand new year for 2022.
2022.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Some stuff has happened over the last couple of weeks, which is pretty cool. We talked with the folks over at Noble Collection, and they asked us, they said, hey, do you guys want to take a look at this new product that's going to be coming from the what they're calling the Harry Potter collection? And right away, I thought, Sean is going to love this. So I told the rep, I said, well, you know, we have a guy that is a pretty big fan, I think, of Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings. I think it would be kind of cool. So for those that haven't seen it yet, there is video of you doing the unboxing on our website.
Yeah, unboxings are fun because I had no idea. You said, hey, Noble Collections is going to send you a box of stuff. Open it up, check it out.
Yeah.
So I thought, why not do an unboxing video? Those are always fun to see. Check it out on our website. I won't spoil anything, but it was pretty cool what they sent us. My wife, Caitlin's a much bigger Harry Potter fan than I am. But, you know, it's all about to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Harry Potter, which is cool. And we have not watched the new...
I can't believe you haven't watched it yet.
We've been so busy. Caitlin picked up some extra hours over the holiday break, and I had to work New Year's Day and the day after. So we haven't had a time, but we want to watch it together. So
it's one of those, if you watch it without her, you'd be in trouble.
Oh, yeah. She got mad at me for not asking her to help me unbox the stuff.
That would have been great too. I've showed this to friends, Sean, and the one factor in I'll tell you, all our unboxing videos, and we haven't done too many. We need to start doing more of those. But when we do them, those are the ones that get the most views. The unboxing is always kind of like, what's in the box? What are they going to show? And those are very popular. But one of the things that people like the most about it that told me was the fact that you brought in a little personal story about this.
For our listeners who don't know this story, and my wife and I, Caitlin's been a huge Harry Potter fan her whole life, right? She has a friend who founded and started the site MuggleNet, which is a big MuggleNet site. So she's been on that site for a long time, and she got pre-public sale tickets to one of the first showings of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child in London.
In London.
And when it came out in 2016. So in October of 2016, we took a trip to London in the UK to watch Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I had always anticipated, we had been dating for about 3.5 years at that point, and I had always anticipated like incorporating some sort of nerddom into our proposal. So
yeah.
It just happened to be that I was like, this is perfect. So there's a website called Alivander's Wands, and they make all sorts of Harry Potter wand replicas and stuff, but they make custom specific wands.
Oh, wow.
So you can spend a little bit more money than most people should on a replica, but you can give them details and kind of personality quirks about your significant other, and they will tie those into the lore of Harry Potter and give you the specific what type of core, what type of wood, all that stuff. So I'd have to go look at it because I can't remember all the – I haven't looked at it in a while because it's not like we get it out all the time.
Yeah.
It was very cool. So we had spent the day – walking around London. It was rainy. My brother-in-law's going to kill me for telling this part of the story, but, you know, we're just kind of sitting in a pub drinking. He goes, it's just, can we just keep going? And like, so we can get done with the day and just go to a couple more pubs. And my sister-in-law was like, no, don't you remember what Sean talked to you about this morning? He goes, oh, that's fine. We can keep walking around. So we ended up going through Westminster Abbey, which if you go to the UK, it's just a very great place of salt. It's solemn. It's got all of the history there is great, and we kind of ended our night at a pub nearby, and we were walking back by, and it's lit up at night. It's just a beautiful building, and so I had my sister-in-law take my camera bag, and I walked over and said, hey, I need your help with this for a second. I need you to hold on to this, and that allowed me to grab the wand out of the bag, which I'd been carrying around all day.
Oh, man.
With the ring.
Were you nervous, like, throughout the day?
Terribly.
Yeah.
Put the ring on the wand, so it was like dangling from it, and then like held it up like it was on one knee. So in the video, there's a picture of it because my sister-in-law had my camera, she was taking pictures of it and stuff. So proposed to her there, just, you know, just, it was really cool. It was kind of drizzling. It was just kind of surreal, right?
Yeah.
And then as soon as we stood up, two of the guards from Westminster came over. Sir, did we just witness a proposal? And I was like, yes. He goes, here, have this. And he hands us this coin that has the Westminster logo on it and stuff, and it's got the date on it and stuff, and it's really cool. So that I put that picture in the video too. Yeah. So that's the picture.
I didn't know
that's
what that
the
was.
Coin I'm holding. So.
Oh, how cool!
So when we did our engagement pictures, we incorporated the ring and the wand, and that's my engagement story, short and sweet. We got to see the show in London, which Caitlin and I are also huge theater nerds. We both did theater in high school and in college, so it was really cool to see that show at the Palace Theater, which is where Andrew Lloyd Webber lived in his tenure when he was at the Palace Theater. It's where he wrote Phantom of the Opera and a couple other of his big shows. So sitting in that theater, just going, this is where a lot of theater history has been written and made. It was just awesome. And the show itself is awesome. Caitlin has gone on to see it more than once here in the U.S. when it came to Chicago and New York.
I love the fact that it is incorporated. So if you watch the video, you'll actually see these pictures from it. And it just, it really, it gave it a personalization, you know, a little kind of backstory. You guys were fans of this. And for you to be able to take a look at this Noble collection, you know, from them, it's actually pretty cool.
So I won't spoil it for anybody, but they did give us a couple cool things. So if you're interested, check it out. It's about 8 minutes long. Won't take very long. It doesn't take very long for me to unbox it, but it's just kind of fun. You know, I get to unbox it. I get to cut all the paper, and it's fun.
Have you been back to England since then?
No, we have not.
You know, because there's so much to see when you go to England. Like last time I was there, I want to say it was 73, but I remember going back and seeing, like, you know, I remember the Tower Bridge. I remember going up to my relatives and riding a bike around with my cousins. It's like, it's funny because I have a lot of family still over there.
I have family in Germany, and I've been there in the past, but this has been years ago. But I think the biggest takeaway from that trip was just obviously the engagement, but just how much history is there.
Yeah.
With the Tower of London and the Roman baths in Bath. And because we went there because Caitlin studied abroad in Bath at the University of Bath.
You're kidding me.
Back in the mid 2000s.
That's where my family, most of my family on my dad's side lives, is in Bath.
Yeah. So she took us up there to where she used to live in her apartment and where she went to school. And, you know, we toured the Roman baths and stuff, which is just, it's just crazy to think all that history is so much older than what we think. You know, the U.S. is just, you know, just over 200 years old. And it's just crazy to think how much more history there is to the world than the U.S. in itself. So
I remember
very cool to see.
I remember seeing the Queen when I was there because it was the Jubilee and it was the parade. And, you know, nowhere here, I think, or maybe at the time it was a little different, seeing her ride by and waving at the Queen. But I mean, like, I could see her. It wasn't like she was a little speck in the distance. She was like right there. I mean, it was so cool.
We did the whole change. We went and watched the changing of the guard at the Buckingham Palace, which is cool. So the Queen was there because of the flags flying. That means the Queen's there. And the most British thing, I think, as a musician could have happened, right?
Right.
The Royal Guard Band, which performs as they walk out in changing the guard stuff, they play pop culture music now.
Yeah.
And I never thought this was the most British thing I think that could have happened was that they played the James Bond theme song in front of Buckingham Palace while we were waiting. And it was just awesome. I'll have to share the video of that because I recorded it on my camera when we were there. But that was cool to see. And it's I know that there's a lot of people don't care for a monarchy, but it's all pop and circumstance. It's all fanfare. But that kind of stuff is just so cool to see in person. And you know the history of it, and it's just really cool.
It is. I gotta tell you, I got a little beef, and we call you on the show the Wise Cam Man, because I mean, when it comes to the company Wise, we have always really just, we're like, wow, this is a great product. I remember Justin, if you remember at the beginning when we first started talking about Wise, he was a little like, well, where's this product made and who's behind it? And, you know, it's a Seattle-based company that makes these products and puts them out inexpensively. We're starting to see them now. Starting to see them in pet stores. Home Depot. Our Home Depot has a whole big skew of all the different Wise products. I picked up the PT camera. It's pan tilt indoor camera. That's pretty cool. I picked up the Wise outdoor plug, which is pretty cool. The only thing they didn't have that I really wanted to get was the lamp socket. So I'm online and I'm looking online on their website, and it said now available lamp socket. And I'm thinking, oh, this is cool. This is a, for those who don't know, and Sean, you got one. I don't know if you put it to use yet.
I put it in, so I can talk about that after you're done.
Okay, so you supposedly you screw it in your light bulb, and then it's got a USB connection on it. You can plug your outdoor camera in without having to run that wire all the way through the house and do that. So there you go. You got it plugged in. You don't have to worry about recharging it the whole bit for your outdoor camera. So I thought, oh, this is cool. It's available. So I went online, and it says available to ship in 4 to 6 days. So I thought, this is going to be great timing because I already got the Wyze PT that I bought, which was like 50, I want to say 50 bucks for the indoor camera. Then I got the outdoor plug, which I think was like maybe $12, wasn't that much money. And I thought, I'll get the lamp socket and I could show it on TV. So I gave it enough time, 4 to 6 days. Well, we're now going on almost 12 days. And I tried to call them end of last week to say, hey, where is this? You know, just before Christmas, like, where is this? I need it because I got to show it on television. I've already paid for it. You've already charged my card. I couldn't get anybody stateside for tech support. And then, you know what? And I understand people got to make a living, but that was a little frustrating. I got put on hold the first time for 38 minutes. And when the guy came on, he said, well, you bought it pre-order. And I said, no, it didn't say it was pre-order. It said that it was available. And he goes, okay, well, let me come back and I'll go check. Just be a couple minutes. After another 35 minutes, I hung up. And I'm like, this is not good for a company that is trying to grow so much and trying to do things. They got on the Today Show, which I'm sure was a paid placement, and it was really disappointing. And with that problem and the AWS problem that they had, I think it's not a good PR knock for them. And
yeah,
it was very frustrating.
The Amazon outage really sucked for them.
Yeah. For our listeners who don't know what had happened.
So in Amazon West, so there's regions for Amazon West, Central, East, servers that are located in those regions to provide low latency for services in those areas. WiseCam uses Amazon AWS, Amazon Web Services, to host their app and their playback and their Cam Plus and all that stuff. So they had an outage. Well, that outage, a lot of Wyze users were in the dark in terms of how this worked. The Wyze app uses that to actually connect through the app to your cameras.
Got it.
So if you're on your Wi-Fi and you're on your phone, it doesn't just use your Wi-Fi to connect your cameras. It goes through Amazon Web Services. So a lot of people couldn't access their cameras, right? Then when it was restored, a lot of devices didn't reconnect.
No.
A lot of people had to go and physically power their devices. Some of them had to reflash firmware. Some of them had to re-add them onto their app because their app got lost. It couldn't find it. So a lot of people are calling for Wyze to make it localhost. So if your cameras are on your network, you can view them. And now that might include a home bridge or something else, some other piece of hardware completely. That's why they've been developing the RTSP streaming for the cameras, meaning the cameras that are on your network can also output a RTSP stream. That's just a real-time streaming protocol for the web. So you set it up with the firmware. You set it up for an IP address. Now, this is advanced use.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is not for your average home user, right? A lot of your average home users just want to plug it in and make it work. But for those of you who want a good, cheap quality security camera that can function when your power's out or your internet's out or Amazon Web Services is out, version 2 and up, not including the outdoor camera and Wyze Pan camera version 2, you can get this firmware. Now, it runs alongside of the actual firmware. So it's not like the USB firmware where if you flash it, you only get the USB function.
Right.
You can put this firmware on and still control it and still use Cam Plus and still use that stuff. But it allows you to do this RTSP stream, which then you can set up an independent software. I'm using a program called iSpy, which was free. There's a paid version, all that stuff. There are many, many versions, many, many ways you can view RTSP streams. And I'm not going to go through them all here. You can look it up. But you can set up schedules. You can set up when it records. You can set up motion detection. You can set up all that stuff So then I have, I'm building a server, just a PC, right?
Right.
That's going to host with a 2 terabyte hard drive in it. That's going to set up and do its own version of what Cam Plus is doing. So my three cameras that look outside, say Amazon Web Services goes down and I have a break-in. Well, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I can't access my footage. I can't do anything. Oh, wait, but the RTSP was running. So now I've got it backed up locally at home and I can go back and see it in high quality. I can play it back. I can save it. I can archive it. I can do whatever I want with it. So a lot of people are doing that, but they're also calling for Wyze to provide a local option that is user-friendly, not advanced user.
There was also a typhoon in the Philippines where I do believe one of their call centers is. And
yeah, their website had listed that, hey, super typhoon, whatever, you know, happened right before Christmas was affecting their call centers. And, it, you know, they were saying for the health and safety of their families and stuff, they were reducing call volumes and things like that. So,
and I can know understand that, that.
Yeah. And I mean, you probably caught the tail end of that. They've probably got a log volume, but it's you're seeing it. And we've talked about it since version one. Justin and I both have version one Wyze cams, right?
Right.
And so we've been that's been almost 3 years we've been talking about these cameras. And then now they're just growing and growing and growing and growing. And now they're this, they're going to be this huge camera company, media company, even really. But it'll be interesting to see where they go with this popularity.
I thought maybe they'd come today, but no, still have not got the lamp socket. But one of the questions, I was sitting here and I was thinking, well, wait a minute. Because I thought, you know, the lamp feature is pretty cool because it has that, you know, that charging capability on it with that USB device. If you turn off your light, doesn't that stop the camera from operating?
Right. So it's designed. So it comes with a sticker that you can put on the light switch, just do not turn off. You actually have to set it up through the app for the camera to control the light based on rules. So you have to set it up. If it detects motion, turn on the camera or turn on the light.
Right.
Or schedule the light to be on from this time to this time. Right. You can schedule that. You have to do it through the camera that's connected to the light lamp socket.
But you could turn the light on and off with that camera, but yes, you'll still get juice. So it's always on connection, but you'll still get juice up into that. But yes, then, okay, got it. And yeah, you don't have so to use a Wyze bulb.
As long as the light switch is on, you're getting power to the camera. Right now, I set mine up today, actually, because I had some time and I thought about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to update my camera so I can do the RTSP and I'm going to put the lamp socket in. So I did that today. I haven't gone in and adjusted it or anything. So the light's on. It works. I can see the camera. I can see the RTSP. Everything's working great. So I'll set it up tonight, see how it goes, make sure I can adjust it so that it's not every time the leaves blow around, right? It's not going to turn the light on every 5 seconds. But so far it works. It's cool.
How's the quality?
I'm excited because if it detects motion in the backyard, it'll trigger the light.
Right.
And you can set it to turn off after 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. But,
we've had a situation in the last, month where about 10:30 at night, we'll be laying in bed and we'll hear a tapping at the glass and it's in our backyard and it's kind of freaky. And at first, you start going online going, okay, what birds are up at night? Because, I mean, it's pitch black out there. There's no lights. So we still haven't figured out what kind of bird it is. But I was instructed to set that camera up as fast as possible so we can catch what it is that's tapping on the back window. And I didn't hear it the first time it happened, but I had to go investigate it. But the second time, I was like, I got elbowed. And I go, yeah, I hear it. And I go, just wait. Just wait. But it was such a repetitive action that it had to be a bird. She actually thought somebody was tapping on the glass with their finger, which would be very scary.
Terrifying.
Yeah, it would be if that's the case. But no, so hopefully I'll get the camera set up and be able to do that. So I want to do that. But, you know, I had a friend who just bought himself, our buddy Sheriff Tom, just bought himself a Nest. And we were talking about it. I said, well, you can go with Wyze. Wyze offers a great solution for outdoor. I said, or you can go with Nest, which is considerably more. I mean, the difference in cost, we're talking what? $50 versus $200?
Oh, yeah. The Ring camera system. Well, it depends on, there's so many different specific things you can buy, different versions, different bundles, different things, right? But if you were to do an apples to apples comparison for like their doorbell camera to the wired or the wireless doorbell, you're talking $150 more.
Yeah. And they don't really tell you too much on the setup. I mean, you can go ahead and figure it out. But I remember he got a setup and sent me a picture. And I said, yeah, quality's great. I mean, he got the Nest. And that's what I do have that over my garage. And I love it. And he said, the quality's great. And then, like, the next day, he said, okay, I'm hating this. And I said, what's the problem? And he said, every car that goes by, every kid that walks by is triggering my, you know, my camera. And it's sending me a notification. So I told him, well, that's very easy to set up. If you go to zones, you can see, you can do the same thing with the Wyze camera. You set up a zone and you can actually have different zones. So at night you have a zone that will watch the entire street. Because if somebody pulls up to your curb, you want to know why they're there at your curb. Then if daytime, if you're home, you can go ahead and set up one that's really just focusing on your cars. But you can have different zones at different times of the day and they'll just run through it. Wyze does the same thing. But remember, if you get a camera, if you don't want to keep getting the notifications, make sure you set up your zones.
People have to remember, like, I know the Wyze went through this whole thing with Amazon Web Services and stuff, but all of those types of cameras use some sort of web service. It wasn't just Wyze. I know everybody's...
All of them went through it.
Everybody's dumping on Wyze saying, like, oh, Wyze, they're so cheap. They can't have a robust system. Look how many other things were offline those days, right, that Amazon went down. Disney Plus was offline for several hours for some people. Netflix was down. It's not... It's like the more and more companies and solutions rely on Amazon Web Services, if there's an outage, something is going to be affected.
Yeah.
I get it. It happens. But just in the world of Internet of Things, people are going to have to be a little bit smarter about the devices they choose and why they're choosing them. And if you're choosing the cheapest because it's good and cheap, which is not a phrase you usually hear, then that's what you're going to get. You're going to get issues sometimes like this.
My only problem is I just didn't get the product. Not yet. Hopefully I'll get it this week. And if I do, I'll unbox it.
Yeah, I should do Wyze unboxings for all the stuff I get. I actually
seriously.
Have, I just bought their Wyze switch. So like a wall switch.
Right.
So I could use it to control certain devices in my house.
I didn't even know, like, they had this.
Right. I pre-ordered it because it's not available. Once they do a pre-order, it's not usually available on their website until it's available.
Right.
What I didn't realize is it's not just a placeholder switch. You actually have to wire it in so it gets power.
Oh, wow.
However, you go on the forums, and I could link this at some point. There's a guy who took it apart, found out that, hey, it's just a 5-volt circuit board in here that controls everything Wyze related. You can just wire it up with 5-volt instead of running 120 to it.
Oh, very good.
I am going to take one apart, attempt to wire it up so it does 5-volt only, and control my living room lights with it.
Well, do us a favor. Please be careful. I don't want you to fry yourself or anything like that. That's not good.
I've done plenty of electrical work. So
Broadway's already done that once.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We come back. We'll have more of Tech Talk Radio. Of course, I want to talk about what happens when you have a product and it no longer is being supported, which we have seen this past week. We'll talk about that more with Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Sean DeWeird. You can find us on the web, techtalkradio.com.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Right before the break, you talked about what happens when you upgrade a piece of hardware or software and something is no longer supported.
Yeah.
Right? Like an old iPhone or an old... This happened to us at work recently. We upgraded our SAN store, our network storage system, and we have a legacy piece of hardware. We know it's legacy, and it's a device that records video and stores it on our SAN. It takes video in and encodes it and records it. The version of the software it needed to run to connect to the SAN is no longer supported on that version of macOS.
Uh-oh.
So what do we do?
What happens?
We're stuck.
Do you have to buy new hardware?
We don't know yet. We're in the process of trying to figure out if the vendor can patch us to support the new version, but they're on a legacy. It's legacy. It's sunset. So we'll see.
That can be expensive. And that's, you know, you run into this when you do upgrades. Like for anybody that's going to go from, say, Windows 10 to Windows 11, you might all of a sudden find out scanner's not working anymore or printer's not working anymore. I've gone through this with multiple Windows installations. I mean, we used to have an old... I want to say it was a MuseTech scanner, the old SCSI type connector.
SCSI connector.
Yeah.
You don't hear that very
We're
often
going
anymore.
Way back. And I remember doing an upgrade, and that was it. I couldn't use that scanner anymore that we had bought for $700 just a few years before that. So as technology progresses, well, this week, I don't know if you know this, but BlackBerry finally went away. For anybody, and what I still don't understand it, because those that had BlackBerry devices, RIM BlackBerry devices, so it's using the actual BlackBerry OS, they were told back in September, well, you know, your texting and the phone service is not going to work anymore on January 4th. So this past Tuesday is when they kind of stopped. But many people thought, well, that's okay, because, I mean, I know you do, I do, I have old iPhones that I will still use Wi-Fi, and I don't have service on them. I still use it for Wi-Fi and still play games or maybe listen to music or do whatever that I can do with those. Well, even with BlackBerry, even if you can't even use the Wi-Fi feature anymore, they've been completely locked out. And so the word is they kind of waited till Sunday to start saying, hey, BlackBerry users, if you got something on your phone, you might want to get that off of there. Now, this has been confusing to some because there is BlackBerry Android. Those are okay for now. Those are okay. So that's the question is, what do you do when you buy something and it no longer is supported?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the unfortunate world of Internet of Things and security, right? It's most often updates break things or stop supporting things because older versions of operating systems aren't compatible with current security things, security patches or security needs. So a lot of people don't think that, oh, they're doing this just because they want to make something obsolete, so I buy the next best new thing.
Right.
Partially, yes. That's consumerism. That's capitalism. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't like it, stop buying it.
But we saw that with tablets. I mean, I've got an iPad Gen 2. And it was funny because I realized this after the fact. I went ahead and I dropped it years ago and took a big dent out of it and a crack in the screen. And I use it once in a while to play games. I've got my slot machine games on there. It's a lot of fun. I think I still have Flappy Bird on there, which, you know, you can't get anymore. That went away a long time ago. But, I mean, it's just for fun. So I decided, oh, I'm going to fix it. So I went ahead and I ordered the iFixit kit, which will allow me to replace the screen, the digitizer, the battery, and it was going to, you know, it's like brand new. And then I realized something after I'd already ordered it and spent the $80 for the iFixit kit, that it's no longer supported as far as updates. I can't get an update for the latest iPad and some of the newer stuff coming out. I won't be able to download because it won't work on the older OS. So again, you're in a situation there with, well, at some point you just got to throw it in a drawer and say, you know, forget it.
Yeah. And I think an easy way to make this comparison is for people that maybe not understand exactly what we're talking about is cars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was a federal mandate that said car manufacturers had to produce parts for cars for 25 years after the life of the car.
Right.
So if a car is 25 years old, they no longer have to make parts for that. That's why it's so hard to find parts for cars that are older than 25 years old, because they don't have to make them OEM parts. You can buy aftermarket parts, but no OEM parts. So that's kind of the same thing. It's like the new technology, it doesn't support the old hardware. So if you're not moving forward, you're limiting progression. And I get it, because you have this thing that works, it should work, but it's old hardware. It doesn't support new. You can't put.
It won't talk. It won't talk right to the new stuff. Yeah.
Right. So it's just the progression of technology where as we get better and things get faster, you have to have hardware that supports it.
Can you imagine, though, if one day car manufacturers start saying, okay, well, you know, your car will last for 5 years and then there'll be an update? Because I mean, now
look at Tesla.
Yeah.
Tesla's already shipping cars that don't have all the features enabled. They're there. They do this all the time in the broadcast world for television. You get a piece of equipment that's capable of doing everything you needed to do, but each thing is a license. You want 1080p? License. You want 4K? License. You want HDR? License. You want high frame rate? License. That's the whole subscription model thing, right? That's the everything's going to subscription based because they're claiming Adobe does a lot of software companies do this now, subscription based. You pay a monthly fee. I paid $21 a month to Adobe for Photoshop, Lightroom. I think that's it. I think I get the photographer bundle, whatever that includes.
But don't you get a better experience than somebody who's using Adobe Shop, you know, CS4 or whatever.
But what happens if I say my computer dies and Adobe stops supporting the versions that I was running and all my libraries are in that version, right? I don't have a physical version to go back to support my libraries. I have to upgrade.
Yeah.
Well, it's taking out the every 2 or 3 years you're paying $400 for a new license to $21 a month, which is
$200
over the course of that same period of time, about the same amount of money. And it is providing a greater user experience, but you're limited to not having the physical hardware.
Well, it's like we use Wirecast. Well, we have Wirecast. We haven't used it, but we still pay an annual fee. But it's a lot cheaper than if we would have bought one license, used it for a few years, and then they've got an update that has new features. Now we get them included. So sometimes that subscription model is not a bad idea. I'm in this phase right now where, you know, I've been building a new computer. I'm almost done. I'm just trying to figure out all this RGB and Aura lighting and figure out where to plug the fans in on the motherboard. I've tested it. It fires up. The graphics card is in there. I got the 1050 Ti is what I ended up getting. So I'm excited because I'm almost done. But then I have to think, well, I went ahead and bought a Windows 10 license. I will be upgrading it to Windows 11. But now I have to reinstall my Adobe Photoshop and Premiere 5.5. Will it reinstall? I don't know. So I'm not going to wipe everything off the other computer because I can still use it there. And that'll be kind of a backup.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't care. I mean, the subscription model works for me, right? But it's just weighing, do I need it this month? Do I need to spend the $20 a month? Am I using it for a project? I think that's what people are worried about, is that if I have to be subscribed to all of these different subscriptions, streaming services, it's like, that's just, it adds up quickly. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, because so, I'm subscribing to QuickBooks, to Microsoft Office, my antivirus program. I mean, it's just the way it works now. It just seems to be that's how you do it. It's all subscription based. So always put that, factor that into the cost of things. But the benefit is you always get the updates. You're always going to be up to date with the freshest version. That's one of the reasons I've actually contemplating going to Adobe, because I want to use After Effects and I want to use Premiere, and I'm limited by what I can do by using, you know, CS5 5.5. So it would kind of make sense for that. I don't know. We'll see how that ends up going. But I'm wondering, we'll ever get subscription vehicles. We're going to get cars you got to subscribe to.
I mean, I could see that happening. You can already do that with some things in a car. Sirius XM, OnStar, things like that. But is it going to be like, subscribe for $4.99 to get engine notifications? Like, if you don't subscribe, you're not going to get check engine lights. Or,
oh, that's not good.
Fuel. What if your low fuel light is behind the subscription paywall, right? Like,
yeah, that's not good at all.
But, all right. You got to think, you know, keep in mind, it's like, if they're providing you with the best, newest thing, if you're doing software updates to cars, is it software for navigation? Is it software for the radio? Is it software for your car performance? All that stuff. So there's so many different things that computers run in your car.
This past week was the Consumer Electronics Show. Standing by, we've got Ali Fried from the Consumer Technology Association to talk about the show. And maybe, you know, shed some light on some of the things that we didn't know about it and how you, throughout the entire month of January, can get caught up on what's going on in the world of tech. So we'll be talking with Ali Fried when we come back with Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andy Taylor.
I'm Sean DeWeird.
Find us on the web at techtalkradio.com.
Now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. As promised, this is a big week in technology because, seriously, this is the week of the Consumer Electronics Show. Every year, we look forward to seeing what, you know, what is going to be available from the world of consumer electronics. And Ali Fried is with us, a spokesperson for the Consumer Technology Association, to kind of talk about what to expect with this year's huge show. Ali, it's great to talk to you again.
Hi, Andy. It's so great to talk to you. Thank you for having me on. We are absolutely thrilled to be back in Las Vegas for the 55th anniversary of CES.
55 years. When you think about like all the innovation and the technology that has come about in the last 55 years, I mean, this is pretty amazing stuff. We've got everything from VCRs. I mean, you were one of the first to show, you know, the VCRs at the CES show, the big TVs, mm-hmm. and we're talking, and I was waxing poetic not long ago about the late Jim Barry and how Jim and I were standing watching the unveiling of Panasonic's big 102-inch screen, which at that time was massive. And now you look, everybody can go out to the store, you go to the local Walmart and buy an 85-inch screen. I mean, it's pretty amazing. It really is. So Allie,
it's wild.
With you being in Vegas, I know there are two aspects of this show this year. We've got a, you know, in-person aspect where you're seeing like, what, 2,200 exhibitors that are going to be there. It's made the way for a lot of mid-size exhibitors to come out and show some of the technology they're developing, to even a digital aspect where some of the larger companies are now going digital and showing some of this stuff via a digital presence at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yes, exactly. So we are, like I said, we are just thrilled to be back in person, bringing the technology industry back together. Last year for 2021, we were all digital. And this year, you know, the industry was just ready to get back together in person. So we are thrilled to have, like you said, 2,200 exhibitors, innovators, all coming together to do business. But for those that can't join us in Las Vegas this year, we do have a digital venue. So CES.tech is where those who cannot be physically with us can go watch conference sessions, watch the keynotes. We're still going to have a lot of exhibitors doing product demos. We expect a significant number of product reveals to happen digitally for those who can't be there. So we wanted to make sure to cover all of our bases for those who could join us. Yes, be here. It's going to be incredible. But for those who aren't able to be there this year, we've got everything you need at CES.tech.
Now, Allie, I know that like when, you know, we've been going to CES for so many years. I was even a moderator at a couple of the panels over the years at CES. We saw, you know, computer technology. That was a big, big part of it. But now, I mean, it's not just computers anymore, is it?
It is not. It is not, Andy. It is all over the space. We've got some really cool new product categories at the show this year for 2022. To name a few, food tech is coming out big and strong. All kinds of new ingredients. There's an exhibitor that I am dying to swing by called Beyond Honeycomb. That basically, they've got this AI-enabled robot Ooh. That can literally touch chef-inspired world-class food and recreate it in the kitchen. So I'm like, I need to know what's happening there. Space tech is a big thing. Sierra Space is going to be here with a space plane. And then we're seeing tons with smart home, connected home. I mean, we've all spent 2 years locked in our houses. And so technology companies have taken note of that a lot. Sensor technology is just working with us in the spaces that we're in to make life a little bit easier.
I remember a CES so many years ago, but we had a little gathering at an Italian restaurant that was just outside the convention center. And there was a company there along, FLIR was there and some other big ones, but there was a company there that had this notion that wearable tech was going to be one day a big thing. And I remember talking about it, that this is technology they could put in, say, a shoe or clothing. Yeah. And this way, in saying an example of a place, an assisted living facility, where once in a while it'll happen, somebody will leave and they get lost. This can actually be a life-saving technology to help locate that person and make sure they have the care and the need that they would need to be able to survive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're seeing that come to life today. You know, you're touching on digital health, which is empowering consumers. And we're seeing that across the board. There's going to be a ton at CES this year in the way of telemedicine and remote patient monitoring. They're calling RPM systems. And like you said, it's these connected devices that are, it's giving power back to the consumer so that they can monitor and manage these chronic conditions. We've got an exhibitor here called Withings, which actually has the first FDA-approved smartwatch to monitor all of your body systems. I think there's glucose monitoring, you know, obviously the heart rate and stuff. But you no longer have to be in front of the doctor in person. Technology is coming to you. It's coming to the home. And like you said, the sensors, they're getting so tiny. They can build them in to all kinds of devices. And the cool thing that we're seeing now too is it's not, you know, these big bulky, you know, it looks like I'm wearing some kind of monitoring device. They are sleek, beautiful watches, necklaces, wristbands that are quite fashionable, if I must say so myself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's awesome to see the evolution, digital health, the empowerment that's coming with these small sensors.
Well, and speaking of that, I know one of the companies that has been talking about a smart ring, and I know I've already started to see the ads on television for another company that I believe is at CES this year, showing. So if you've got, you know, you went out and you bought yourself one of them Rolexes or one of those great watches, you might not want to wear a smart watch, but you can now have a smart ring that could go on one of the fingers, and it will constantly manage your heart rate, your glucose in some cases. I mean, the possibilities are endless with this technology that, again, can improve or enhance somebody's overall health.
And that's the point. It should be completely integrated into your everyday life, whether you're at work, whether you're at play, whether you're at home. It's part of you. And that's what we're seeing across the board as far as technology trends and how they're interacting with us as human
yeah.
beings.
Well, I remember years ago, too, at CES, autonomous vehicles. And you know, they set up an area in the parking lot. And the idea was these vehicles could drive themselves. You could go for a ride in it. And that was like at the beginning. Is there going to still be that component where we're going to have autonomous vehicles there on scene showing now where they're at and now what they're able to do?
So the future of transportation is definitely autonomous and electric. So we're going to see that across the board at the show. Actually, very cool for this year. Out at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway, we are having the Indy Autonomous Challenge at CES. It's going to be on Friday. And it is autonomous race cars that are out there in a head-to-head competition, Andy. These things can go up to 100, I'm told, can go up to 160 miles per hour with multiple cars on the track. And they're literally using the data that's in front of them to navigate, to move. And what's so cool is, you know, it's not just applicable to race car situations. It's their whole goal is to advance the autonomous industry, right? What learnings can they have from going 160 miles an hour? Can that play into ambulances one day, fire trucks, emergency response vehicle systems? So I am really, really, really excited to go out and see the Indy Autonomous Challenge and what's happening in the industry shown through these race cars.
Oh, please tell me that they will be streaming some of this for those that maybe not be able to make that out there, because this would be something to see.
They will, hands down. It'll come through again from CES.tech. It's going to be, everyone I know is talking about it. So yeah, it's going to be at noon on Friday, January 7th. So definitely check it out. I think you'll love it.
Now, entertainment plays a big part in our lives. And that also, over the years, we've seen that continue to grow at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas, which is taking place this week. With many companies now able to stream and put their content out there and now find different ways for us to be able to receive that content. Will entertainment play a big portion of this year's CES show? And is there some companies that you could say that will be there showing off some of the newest ways to get that entertainment and some of the companies that are providing that?
Yes, absolutely. So entertainment is always a huge story at this show. We've got a dedicated space for it, actually. It's called C-Space. It's over at the Aria, and it's where everyone from the entertainment community gets together. This is actually going to be one of our biggest C-Space events to date. You know, the marketing, the advertisers, the entertainment industries are all there. You know, we mentioned some exhibitors having to go digital this year, and that will still be the case, but Amazon will have a presence, Best Buy, Discovery, Dish, NBC Universal, Warner Media, all there talking about how we can get all the content we need on every single device streamed in every way through Tuesday, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, C-Space is an area that I love to check out every year. I usually go there and then I head over to Eureka Park, which is my neck and neck favorite spot, because that is where all of our startups are. And this year we have more than 800 startup companies from almost 20 different countries all over there just come into the show with a hope and a dream to say, this is the brilliant idea that I have, showcase it to the world at CES. And just the energy is so palpable over there. So I tell everyone, you know, they ask, where should I start at CES? I always say, start at Eureka Park, because that's just it's where ideas and innovation is born.
It's pretty amazing, too, because you see a lot of companies that'll come out that they've been able to create at their Eureka Park a kind of a prototype. And this is what our technology will do. This is what it can do. And in many cases, some of these companies are looking for the funding to take them to the next step. By being there at CES, it puts them in front of some of the big decision makers, some of the big companies, and as well can actually be part of a Kickstarter campaign, a crowdfunding campaign to really take this product to the next level. And we've seen that happen with companies over the years that suddenly you say, wait a minute, they were at CES. That's where they got their kind of, we got the first look at them.
Exactly. And we've had Shark Tank come in the past because they know that this is where the ideas happen. You may have heard of this little tiny company called Peloton. Mm-hmm. They started at CES as a startup company. So they're a huge success story coming out of the show.
Yeah, what a great way. And I know one of the things that really blew me away this week, and somebody asked me, okay, the technology that you're going to see at CES, you know, what is something you really like? I saw this and I thought, this is amazing. LG has got this. It's a screen that goes like up and then there goes over your head and a little to the sides, and you ride a bike basically, and it's like you're really riding in the woods. I mean, other than the virtual technology, this is really a really cool thing to have.
I know. And I need to learn more about that because I saw the same thing. I like saw the headline and saw the picture and I was like, oh, I need to see what this is all about. But again, it just goes back to, you know, these companies giving us stuff that we don't even know we need or would love or enjoy. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you can't live without it.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty and the magic of all this.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing we talked about, that virtual technology, that is not something that's made just for gamers. We tend to think, you know, if somebody wants to put on a virtual headset, they want to play a video game. And that's great. I mean, that's amazing that they can do it. Flight simulator virtually is just amazing. But it could be used in so many different areas now, from cooking to healthcare to even innovation and creating more technology, that this will also be a part of CES this year, won't it?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, there's applications across the board, pilots, flight simulation, again, with the space tech, everything that has to happen in the virtual world before you actually get up to that outer space level. So hands down, a critical part of the show. And then, you know, we'll see how that all plays out with the metaverse, which is going to be the next phase of the internet. And, you know, CES is going to have all the different components and pieces to see what that will be. You know, the metaverse is still kind of a big question mark for everyone, but we know it's the future of the internet, and we're excited to see where it goes.
I love the fact that CES is really, and I remember talking about this with Jim, was IoT, Internet of Things. That's really where that kind of came about. And now it's metaverse, and it just keeps innovating. And what the Consumer Technology Association does is to help some of these companies find their niche, find their place, and give them the information they need and the connections to really make their products fly. Now, if our listeners want to see what CES is offering this year, Allie, again, what's that website they should go to?
Yes, absolutely. They should go to CES.tech. And the show opens January 5th. We run through January 7th, but all of the digital content within the digital venue will be available throughout all of January. So
perfect.
Swing by, hear the speakers, check out the conference sessions, look at the product launches. We can't wait to get started. It's going to be a really, really exciting CES 2022.
I'm loving it. Now, okay, I got to ask you the question, Allie. All right, thinking about all the technology that's there, it's like kid in the candy store, right? What is the one thing that you would say you really want to see? That is something you think, this is what I want to have as a part of my household or my digital life.
Okay, so hands down, it is the Beyond Honeycomb exhibit that I am told has a robotic kitchen that can make me chef quality food, because the bane of my existence is every night having to feed my family of five. I'm like, why do I have to decide who's eating what? And I have to cook this every night, Andy, every night.
There you go.
So if I could have a robot in my kitchen doing it for me, sign me up today, tomorrow, every day.
Absolutely love that. Again, Allie, always great to talk to you. Have a great time of the show. And You know, we'll have to catch up maybe afterwards and talk about, you know, some of the cool things that you saw this year. Is that cool?
I would love that, Andy. I would love that. We missed you here, but I will fill you in on everything.
Give our love to Pam there, and definitely we'll talk to you again soon. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back with more of Tech Talk Radio.
And now, back to Tech Talk Radio.
Well, you might have missed out this week, but for our website of the week, I wanted to mention Epic Games. Now, when you think of computer games, you think of, you know, you used to be, you get a CD, you would install it, or even a floppy disk. That shows how old I am. You would install it on your computer, and you could play it whenever you want. And then, of course, it went to DVDs, and then you started to see where you had companies like Origin, you had Steam, and then, of course, Epic Games putting out the libraries available for you to play. They could be downloaded to your computer, but stored in a library online. And it's funny because I was telling you about this computer I'm building, Sean. I just noticed, because the case I have is a Corsair 220T. It's a cool case. It's got colored fans, the whole bit. I just realized there is no slot for a DVD drive anywhere on it.
Yeah, unless you're ripping DVDs or you're trying to install old games that they probably have a digital version anyways, why would you need one?
Exactly. So, I mean, LG makes a cheap one. You could plug in a USB. So I guess I'm going to go that way. But I've always had a stack. Usually I've had a DVD drive, you know, a burner, a Blu-ray drive burner. And then I usually have an external drive that I can pop in there and pull out and put another one in. I don't have that anymore.
I couldn't sell at my garage sale this past summer. I couldn't sell them for $1 a piece.
Really? Your DVDs?
DVD burners.
Oh, burners. $1 a piece?
Yeah, $1 a piece.
Wow. It's crazy where that's gone.
They either didn't know what they were or they just didn't. Who uses them? Nobody.
Well, and now that's, you know, that's the case when it comes to games. You can download a game and play it. Now, Epic Games this past week, and they've already wrapped this up, but I'd say keep an eye on their website. They just offered the entire Tomb Raider trilogy available. Now, for those that don't know how Steam works or Epic Games works, you play a lot of these. I mean, you have some of these. How is this function? Do you have to pay like a subscription to Epic or Steam?
No. So they're just companies that facilitate developers, right? They are the middleman. Some of them have their own content, right? Steam is making their own console, that kind of thing. So you download Steam or you download Epic Games or you download Origin. There's pretty much every vendor of video games has one. Blizzard has one. Blizzard, you know. So you download their installer, and then you use that to install the games you buy through Epic Games or through Blizzard or things like that. So if you go to epicgames.com, you can buy hundreds of video games, hundreds of different video games, and they do sales and things like that. Then you download them through the installer. So your games are digital only. You don't get a physical copy in the mail. It's just digital. It lives only digital. And like Andy said just now, if you go, you may have missed it, but they had the entire Tomb Raider collection for free. And if you put all three of the games they have for the Tomb Raider collection in your cart, you would pay $90.
Right.
Normally. But because it was game of the year, the 20th year celebration of Tomb Raider, because if you're like me, you originally played it on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
Which was an awesome game to play on the PlayStation. Right. So Andy talked to me, said, go get these games. I went and downloaded them. I've got them for free. Will I play them? Who knows?
Yeah. And the nice thing is, if you ever change computers or you go to another computer and you want to play it there, you just log into your account, whether it be Steam or Epic or Origin or Blizzard, and you can actually download it to the computer and play it there.
Yeah, which is great because then you're not hunting for discs. You're not hunting for CD keys. You're not hunting for all this stuff. And they've been doing that a lot with older digital games. GOG or Good Old Games has a lot of good old digital games as well. Dooms, Wolfensteins, Hocus Pocus, King's Quest, all those. If you're looking for good old games, go there because I've downloaded more of those games than I care to admit because they were my childhood.
GoodOldGames.com.
The discs that I have they're not supported because they're older versions that don't support newer hardware. We just talked about that, right?
Yep. I need a floppy drive. Good luck. All right. That's it for this week's show. Again, Epic Games is one. GoodOldGames.com is another one for you to download some content and have some fun with. In the meantime, have yourselves a great week. Sean, great to see you again. And we'll talk to you again next week for more of Tech Talk Radio.
Sounds great. Have a good week.